Okay, we're live again with Mark Gray and talking about UFOs. Are you with us, Mark? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
And I even forget where we were. I used to have a mind, but then I got old.
You're getting mind controlled. Watch out.
I have mind control. Maybe that's a blessing. I don't have one anyway. Yeah, when you talk about mind control, and do you think that that is has anything to do with aliens, the mind control issue?
In the abduction phenomenon, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, as I said, some can be linked to extraterrestrial contact, cult abuse, or military abductions, and you know, all those are anomalous traumatic experiences. You know, mm-hmm. So it's pretty close to NDEs as well. You know, near death experiences. I mean, what abductees live and experience sometimes is very close to near death experiences.
But I think that, you know, I take a look at different situations like Dulce and the horrors that came out of there and Montauk, and I begin to wonder, you know, there was a lot of, I think that there was intervention there of aliens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's all linked to the aliens, I believe. Somehow we're aliens as well. I mean, I do believe in genetic engineering of our species. So you know, somehow I think we have an alien base in our DNA. Mm-hmm. So
well, it depends. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we're all hybrids anyway. So
right.
You take a look at history and mm-hmm. You read it the right way, it's right. Basically spelling out that we're hybrids. But what's the other alternative? Being a Neanderthal, this Homo sapien, you know? No.
Right. Well, according to the Anunnaki story, I guess we were engineered to become a slave race, you know, in order to harvest the gold, you know, and for them. Mm-hmm. And we broke away from that with Enki, who felt empathy towards us and helped us get away from the bad Anunnakis, I guess.
Right. So, what do you think the gold was, Mark?
The
gold
was?
Do you think it was gold for the sake of gold, or do you think it was gold for something else, like a...
For something else, to help them repair their planet's ozone layer or atmosphere, you know, so...
And I wonder if it was, you know, in a different form. I guess I'm going towards the alchemy end of it, but... And the white powder gold stuff, but you know.
Right. The white powder gold. Yeah, actually, I talked to Neil Freer earlier tonight, mm-hmm. and he told me about this famous white powder gold. It's basically meant for longevity, you know,
right.
To prolong life, lifespan, and basically, it was discovered by some archaeologists, some very famous archaeologists from England. Back in the days, I think in the 1900s, mm-hmm. And then they tried to produce it in England, but they wouldn't let them. I guess the big pharma wouldn't let them. He's mentioned something like a website called whitepowdergold.com or something. I haven't even checked it yet. But Lawrence Gardner also mentioned it in his book Lost Secret of the Secret Arcs or something,
right.
And it's supposed to basically allow you to live longer or something, so haven't tried it and haven't even really investigated this thing here, but you know.
Well, that's one of the things that I have investigated and mm-hmm. I have tried it and mm-hmm. it I think that it is again has to do with consciousness. Are you aware of what it can do? With, you know, because I did try it, and another fellow tried it alongside me, and he got mm-hmm. absolutely nothing from it. But he was more on the negative side, so I was looking for something, and I certainly got a form of enlightenment. And now I'm going back 10 years, and I'm going back to when we did the White Powder Gold end of it with David Hudson from Arizona. And
That's it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And
the cotton farmer. The cotton farmer.
Right. Who happened to be a millionaire farmer, by the way.
David Hudson.
Yeah. That's what we're talking about. Sorry, right. John. I'm going to have to do is plug John in here.
Sure.
John, my co-host, is getting everything secondhand.
All right.
Now you can shut your player down, Bill.
Yeah,
so it doesn't
go. Hi, John.
Yeah. How's
it going? Fine.
Yeah, so yourself. David Hudson, and of course I've read all the books of Lawrence Gardner's, including Secrets of the Sacred Art. And
What do you think of the RNA drops? I've heard of those.
RNA drops.
I'm sure what they do. I guess they interact with the DNA or something. It's threatened to our DNA. I don't know. I got this information from Eve Logan, so I haven't really checked it. RNA drops. I have no idea.
No, I don't know what that is either. It almost sounds something like it would have to do with the ORMIS or the ORMS, which is the orbiting monatomic atom. It's a high-spin atom. It happens when you do white powder gold. There's many different ways of getting white powder gold. You can get it from sea salt and curing it with lye and taking away the bad and leaving the good, I guess, if you want to put it that way.
Right.
And the highest
to activate.
Concentration of white powder gold is in, or ORMS, if you want to put it that way, is in grapes that they make wine with, of course. And
we have quite a bit here.
Good. There is also another way of making it, of course, is to arc it. If you have an arc, like especially today, because we have arc welders, if you arc pure 24-karat gold, you end up with only 54% or 56%, 56%, something like that, of gold when it melts down. And the rest of it is a white powder sitting around it. And that white powder is basically lighter than air. And if you put the white powder into a dish, a metal dish of some kind, the dish actually gets lighter than what it was. And and if you arc it twice, the second time it disappears.
Wow. Okay.
And then
it's almost like alchemy.
Right. And then when you arc it again, it comes back. And it goes into another dimension. And it's a high-speed atom. And what it contains is iridium and rhodium on the periodic table. And the other place where iridium and rhodium together is found is in the melanoma, which is the production of the liquid from the pineal and pituitary gland, and the more production of the melanoma into the brain, the more the brain can take in the energy, so it expands or enlightens the brain. And if you were to take 2 milligrams, and 2 milligrams really isn't that much. If you take a look at a baby aspirin, which is 81 milligrams, and you cut it in 40 pieces, and you take a couple of those pieces, you got 2 milligrams. If you were to ingest orally 2 milligrams of white powder gold, pure white powder gold, then for 40 days and 40 nights, if you want to put it that way, then your brain would be conditioned to produce that all the time. You don't have to take it anymore.
Oh, and, I see.
So the brain is conditioned to, the pineal and pituitary glands, I should say, are conditioned to producing that much. So you stay basically enlightened, and you don't need to take it anymore. Now, that's what I did 10 years ago.
Okay.
And look at the mess it's got me in.
And especially, you paid quite a bit for it. I see that 1 ounce bottle of white powder gold is like $90. You know, so.
Well, I paid over $300.
Okay, all right, it's going down.
10 years ago, but it was made by the Ascension Group. You can look that up on the net. TheAscension.com, I think, is the name of it. And a gentleman by the name of Jeff runs that, and they will not sell it to you without you phoning them and having like a 10-minute conversation, saying why you want it, And right. They will evaluate whether they will sell it to you or not. It's just you just can't go on the net and buy it. And and then we have different friends of mine, Dave and Ricky, from Peterborough, Ontario, who make Ormus, which is another form of white powder gold, high-spin atom. And I'd just like to say that while in the production of it, they make it from, I think, sea salt or something. And when they were producing it, what you do is you put it in the sea salt and you put water in it with a lye, and then you mix it all up, and when it settles, you drain the water off, and then you put more water in it, and you do that 3 or 4 times. And what they were doing was just taking it and pouring it out beside a tree in the backyard. And, of course, this was, you know, in the early spring. And all of a sudden, the rhubarb that was there started to grow. And I have a picture, and one day I'll find that picture, John, put it on the, you know, we should.
Yeah.
Of John holding the leaf of the...
And the stalk.
And the stalk of the rhubarb, and the leaf must have been at least 4 feet wide.
Whoa.
It was massively huge. And you would think with something that way, that big, it would be very pulpy and not good at all. But it had to be 2 inches in diameter, the stalk.
Oh, yeah.
And we cut off slices of it and ate it, and it was juicy like an apple. It was absolutely beautiful.
And sweet.
And sweet. And it was just the best rhubarb I've ever tasted. And it came off, you know, so it certainly regenerated that that rhubarb. But getting back onto the subject, it... When you go back into history and you take a look at the different spells and stuff in the Egyptian Book of the Dead, like spell 125, the 42 assessors of the dead, and spell 126, I think it is, John, I forget the number, which is the opening of the mouth, and it's where the priests are offering the gift of the bread, the combs, the bread to the pharaoh. And it is white powder gold. And this is what, you know, and then when you take a look at Moses and what happened at Mount Sinai, when they actually found the location, it was a huge temple, and it was very large on the outside, but just the same size on the inside. And when they got in there, they found, you know, volumes and volumes of this white powder. And they didn't know what it was back then. I think it was the early 1900s. And and then you read in the Bible, and you take a look at, and I really believe that Moses was Akhenaten anyway. And when you go into the Bible, Moses came down with the Ten Commandments. One of the reasons why I believe he was Akhenaten is because he had to be a pharaoh to know the 42 assessors of the dead, because each one of those is a commandment, and he picked 10 good ones and gave it to the people. And he had to be a pharaoh to know it. Just the ordinary common man didn't. But then he threw down the tablets, and he saw that, because he saw that they were worshiping a golden calf. And read in the Bible, and what does it say? It says that he fired the golden calf, and the white powder of it he mixed with water and fed it to the Israelites so they would become knowledgeable. You're going back into white powder gold again. So we can go on and on and on, which I won't do, but I'm just saying that here's another example of the intervention of these entities from outside our planet. Every single god that every religion has is from outside our planet.
Right, that's true. That's true.
Or if he isn't outside our planet, like Jesus, his father is. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, that's the ancient astronaut theory as well. I mean, you know, you can actually see proof of this and artifacts that prove it. You know, presence of extraterrestrial gods coming from the skies from, you know, throughout history. So,
why would it be any different today?
Oh, it's no different. It's just more subtle. It's just more subtle because they don't do it publicly to the masses, you know. That's what I'm saying. What is it going to take for an entity or an alien public disclosure coming from their end? You know, as I said, if it's coming from the government, it's going to serve their agenda. I mean, the government's agenda, it's not going to be positive.
No, for sure.
I'm talking about the Blue Beam Project and all those holographic false flag alien invasion and things like this, which are in the plans, I'm pretty convinced, with the New World Order. I'm not being a conspiracy theorist when I say that. I think I've foreseen the signs of it.
Don't we have to wake up, though, and take a look at reality? I mean,
yeah.
If you take a real good look at the history of the Georgia Stone and right. where it came from and who paid for it and all the rest of the stuff, that's a bloody agenda.
Right.
And take it down to 500 million, I think, people or something on the planet. And that would sustain the elite with all the luxuries that they want.
Right.
And to hell
right,
with
right.
the 6.5 billion of us, the rest of us.
Right. Well, what I could say is that it's a serious topic, and it's being ridiculed in the media, you know, in the public eye, for a purpose. Basically, all the ufologists or ufology networks and circles, at least in France, but I know in the U.S. and in Canada, it's probably the same, are infiltrated by government agents. You've got Freemasons all over. On backs here in France, you have the Japon, which is basically the property of the Kness. The Kness is like the French NASA, and they spend what 70,000 euros a year, which is nothing, for national research on ufology with the Japon, which is supposed to be a public funded. Organization, a group who has like pretty much nobody all around France to investigate. They're out there to say that the government does something and does some research, and that's all they need to show, for taxpayers' money, what it's worth, which is like 70 or 80,000 euros per year, which is nothing. It doesn't even pay one engineer here. So basically, those guys say that they're serious, anything that they come up with is Thai lanterns, like Chinese lanterns. That's all there is. And I know some of MUFON must be the same in the U.S. We have the MUFON France that it's pretty much the American version of Japon, they're pretty much government sponsored, more or less. So we're not getting anywhere with them. As far as the truth being uncovered, just to say that it's a serious topic, it's a serious field because we're being infiltrated at all levels. We even have fake abductees going into groups, pretending they're real. They're for real, and they've never been abducted, and then they come up and tell the truth that they're, they say that they've been lying and so forth. So it discredits the whole group. And it discredits the rest of the real abductees and experiencers out there. So who's to say that they haven't been programmed or at least mind controlled to do so, to infiltrate those groups and those support groups.
So. Well, you get different situations in the world and you begin to wonder exactly what is mind control and how does it work. I'm going to give you an example of the Boston. Bombing about some Boston Marathon, and we got a 19-year-old kid, and they were pinpointed as suspects, and they did a complete martial law in Boston, and they shut down the airspace over Boston. They did massive millions of dollars worth of stuff to get a 19-year-old kid that was hiding in a boat, and that same kid on the day of the Boston Marathon, he went home and back to the dormitory, and he was talking normal to all his friends, and there was no concern at all about the Boston bombing. He said it was a horrible thing that happened, and he went on with his life. He went to a party that night or whatever, and he was just going on with his life. And what I say is, what would you do if you were pinpointed, Now, did he go on with his life because he was mind-controlled? I don't know, right? Like he might have been mind controlled, and all of a sudden he came out of it and thought, "Well, I didn't do anything. Well, what do you after me for?" And another patsy, like I don't know.
Or somebody, so many of them out there. It pretty much looks like a false lightning attack or a recuperation, you know. So basically some I think NCOs or main soldiers were identified on the surveillance cams, you know, had like backpacks, you know, on their back and stuff. And they were supposed to be the one who did it. Not those two guys or whatever. You have to look into numerology and see what numbers or digits relate to what event, what date, what energy extraction for a ritual they can extract from it, or they can exploit. You know, it's always the same process with the New World Order or false flag attacks to impose like freedom. Like those new stupid laws that will, you know, basically reduce your freedom. Basically, on the, for example, I was going to give an example of the explosion. You know, north of Waco, Texas.
Oh yes. Yeah.
You remember that one?
Right. That was a or something, wasn't it? I don't know.
Right.
It was something like that anyway, but they blew up the whole neighborhood.
Right. And basically, it was 10 years, on April 20th, 10 years from the Waco, killing. Right. But the FBI answer, basically, it was, it's the same thing. Put it a ritual to you, and it's wax 10 years. Today, day by day. Well, day to day. Basically, it's the same day. Same day, but 10 years later. It looks like a ritual to me. I don't know about you guys, but I think it looks like a ritual. So, it looks like something planned, even though it may look like an incident from our standpoint. But it's definitely the same date. So,
well, you take a look at all the major events like that, they seem to correlate to something. The date means something. It just isn't, you know, a particular day that at random that it happens. It's
it's never at random. It's like the Pope election. I mean, come on, you see what we call the Black Pope. You know, he's the chief of the Jesuit. He's the first Jesuit that is actually the Pope now, and he's supposed to be the 111th Pope, the last Pope of the Catholic Church.
Right.
And basically, he's the chief of the Jesuits, and the Jesuits have a pretty dark agenda. They've been, you know, chased out of many countries in the past, and since Ignacio de Loyola. Started it, you know. He was a former war general or colonel. I forgot, you know, with the conquistadors and stuff. He killed many Indians himself. And as soon as he got hurt, you know, in the battlefield, he thought to himself, "Oh, I'm gonna control the world through religion." And he created the Jesuit movement. And you know, they basically started so many, so many wars and so many movements that were pretty negative throughout the world. And when you think about it, I guess the Vatican is on its way down. It's going to implode, I think, with this last pope.
Right. Now I wonder if it'll go down because it's the discretions of the. The church, or will it go down because everything else is going down too?
I can tell you what Carrie Cassidy told me in Paris last week regarding the Vatican. Actually, she had her car actually searched by the Vatican secret service, which is called the SIV, you know, Servizio Información del Vatican, and because they were looking what she had collected as far as information from an Italian journalist. His name was Barbato, and look for his name. She interviewed him basically, and he was on the run. Cristoforo Barbato, I don't know if it rings a bell, because he had come up with some secret insider information from the Vatican, and he wanted to basically publish it. And regarding the Planet X, it's not a coincidence that the Vatican actually spent $150 million to purchase an infrared major huge gigantic telescope that is in Arizona right now, in the Arizona desert, whose acronym is called Lucifer. You know, it's an acronym. It's like long infrared something. Well, you can look it up on the internet. But basically, she had a car searched by those guys. And you know, in Italy, when they search a car in an airport, in the Milan airport, they usually take the money. No money was taken, no credit cards, no cash, no nothing. They were looking for the information she had collected from that Italian journalist, Cristoforo Barbato, basically. I'm putting up the link here. What I wanted to get at to get to is that she told me that the Secret Service of the Vatican was modeled after the CIA. Basically, it had the same modus operandi as the CIA. So you know, we think they're little angels, but they're not. Well, and she told me that they were a nest of reptilians, basically. So that's wow. Some kind of a David Icke expression, but she told me in person that the Vatican was basically a nest of reptilians. So,
well, when you take a look again, when I go back to Ceremonial Magic, and you take a look at the icons within the Vatican, and what they've known for thousands of years. And you take a look at it, like, why does the Pope hold a staff with an acorn on the top of it? Why is there the acorn square, one of the biggest squares that at the Vatican, and there's a huge acorn there, and it's a symbol of the pineal and pituitary gland, and they've known this stuff for years, and they've known much more than that, and they have been in control, and
the weirdest thing too is that you know how much they have in the bank, right? And the Vatican Bank, 5 billion euros.
Yeah.
that's quite a bit. And guess what? And the lodge P2 lodge in the 70s. They were caught in like fraud and money laundering and so forth. It was like a secret lodge that was running also the Vatican and was dealing with them. The bank account of the Vatican was basically run by the Milanese. Is that how you say it? The Milanese mafia. So that's a proven fact. It's written. There was a trial back then. So they pretty much officially pulled out of running the Vatican's bank account. But who knows?
Well, I know.
So
trying to piece this massive puzzle together is really something, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a big puzzle, but. Actually, when you get down to it, it's pretty simple to understand. How the world works, and the people will call you, will brand you a conspiracy theorist as soon as you mention a name. You know, secret society. Oh no, there's nothing secret. You know, government cover up. No, no, there's no cover up. And it's like, you know, and then they'll brand you, negationist. Is that an English word? I forgot. You know, when you negate something. You know, revisionists, all those words, and they just don't give you the opportunity to question any events, any turn of events that look pretty fishy or awkward, you know. So it's the same with ufology. As soon as it gets pretty sensitive, you're usually censored pretty quickly. Well, there's some radio stations in France where I wouldn't even be able to say half of the things that I've been saying tonight.
Well, I'm sure. So, it's so easy to. I used to have a saying, and it was funny because John Ventry, a friend and colleague, and one of my guests, excuse me, got a big kick out of it. Mm-hmm. He uses it, and the saying was. Google before you giggle. Mm-hmm. And that goes out to CNN and all the rest of them. Before they start giggling over UFOs, you better Google it first and find out about it. Google before you giggle. And didn't you look at the so-called agenda. Mm-hmm. Let's say the aliens or the controlling factors. I believe that they're both in cahoots together anyway. I've got different friends who have seen that. Actually seen a ship go by with ordinary, regular human beings on the ship with aliens. And it was like they were doing a crew. Oh, look at that down there. There's a farm. There's this, you know. And let the little people see us for a while. And, you know, what is the agenda? What I'm trying to... The only thing that I can think of is that, like the Georgian Stone, is that what the agenda is for these people? Is to, you know, completely take off, you know, like a huge percentage of the populace and keep the planet for themselves?
Depending on the... And the species that you're talking about, you know, there's a hierarchy among the species that are visiting us, and the hierarchy, the agenda is different according to the level they're operating from. I mean, you know, the reptilians, they probably are pushing the population's agenda to bow down to maybe like 500 million humans on Earth, so that they could have the 300 reigning families and their slaves, you know, their servants. But the other ones that don't want to harm us, that are visiting us much more rarely, I would say, or who are channeling down, you know, through contactees or specially gifted abductees who are, cooperating with them, have a different agenda. I don't think they want us. They want us out of there. But it seems that the ones that are abducting us for breeding purposes want us out because they want maybe to replace us. At least some of them are you know want to live in this dimension, in this world. Some are already living here. The perfect hybrids. David Jacobs said that you know they wouldn't let hybrids, human alien hybrids, live physically on Earth unless they were 100% identical to humans. So they wouldn't be spotted out basically. So there sure is a hybrid program, a breeding program. You know, the real agenda pertaining to each species, I'm not 100% sure what it is, but, you know, I can only assume or suggest that, you know, some want to replace us, some want to depopulate, and some are probably terraforming the Earth to make it more welcoming. It's like preparing the field for their species, but, you know, maybe it needs more radioactive, you know, radioactive, maybe it needs more radiation, you know, for some species to live here. I think the reptilians like radiation, so highly radiation, how would you put it, irradiate atmosphere, so. Mm-hmm.
So you think basically they're walking among us then?
They're what?
They're walking among us.
Oh yeah, hybrids. Yeah, definitely. More than likely. I mean, most people and therapists that I've talked to from all different angles, they have met many abductees who have met a hybrid, and some in real life as well. Mm. You know, and some abductees are taken to some hybrids who are living here on Earth in order to actually train them into real. You know, like real-time, you know, earthling, like, you know, life, everyday life, basically, help them out. Mm-hmm. So, and I think they're just, you know, if you're mind-controlled telepathically, you're not going to say no anyway.
Well,
you can't say no.
That's the thing, too, you know.
Right.
I work alongside a hybrid.
His name is John? Or
John, that's the one. Yeah, I'm beginning to wonder how alien he was.
Always slightly in Bob's past.
Yeah, when we take a look at the whole picture, are you convinced that majority of the hybrids that let's say live among us are benevolent?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they're benevolent? They're here to help us, or do you think there's also? Do you think there's also?
That's a good question. Because is there empathy being developed in their minds, in their brains? Are they dead souls? Who's to say that some are soulless and some have a soul? I mean, if they're genetically bred with humans, interbred with humans, I mean, you could imagine that they have a soul, but maybe it could be contained within, or maybe it could be maybe experienced partially. I mean, who knows? I have no answers for that.
Mm-hmm. I know that Rocket has put a question in. He's asking, are reptilians real?
Yes. Yes, they are real. And I have a speaker who wrote a book. He's sort of like the French version of David Icke, but a little bit more openness in regards to spirituality, and also to positive, aliens as well. But he's actually met, and he was with his mom in a French metro. It was a couple of years ago. A lady who shape-shifted in front of him. And they're sort of like a little bit psychic, him and his mom. And, actually, I think it's because, they're a little bit psychic, and they probably perceived a certain frequency where she was maybe, existing under, I don't know how to explain it. Maybe you can help me with that. They were able to see her. They were the only ones in the wagon. In the metro, in the subway, see her shape-shift. Her eyes were changing, getting darker. Her skin was changing. And as she realized that, both of them saw her change, the next stop, she ran out like a mad woman. So basically, they saw her shape-shifter in the subway in Paris 2 years ago with their own eyes. So, if it was only one person, this guy seems serious. And his mom... It's two. So, I believe two people rather than one.
Mm-hmm. I know that when my sister was living in town, she lives out on the island now, Victoria Island out in British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going back into the 70s, and we have a very large hotel here in town at the Ramada Inn. And... she went in for a conference of some kind, I forget. She was a school teacher at the time. At present, she's a Hollywood casting director for Universal. But she was walking in with a friend of hers, another teacher, to this conference. And she walked in. It was a foyer that you walked into. And then it was like an open ceiling thing, and you could look over... There was a balcony that people could look over onto the foyer. And she looked up and she saw two reptilians.
Right.
And the name of the girl that she was with was Chris. And Chris was... They were passing by a pillar, so Chris wasn't in view of it. And she said, take a look up there. There must be some kind of archaeological thing with reptilians or something, because they got statues or something of reptilians. She looked up after they passed by the pillar, and there was two men standing there in black suits.
Well, okay.
And
okay.
She believed that they shapeshifted just in that short time. But so she had a first-hand account of looking at reptilians, I guess. But,
Right.
Yeah,
well, and you look at the history of the most ancient secret society. I mean, it's called the Brotherhood of the Snake. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to the old Babylonian days. I mean, it was the first secret society known to men. But it's not a coincidence if it was called the Brotherhood of the Snake. I mean, they worshipped basically snakes, reptilians, reptiles, and so forth. So it had a whole agenda behind it. They were actually they were the basis for the Illuminatis. That's who the real Illuminatis who have not disappeared after Weishaupt, in 1776 or something. In Austria, they didn't they didn't go, they didn't vanish. they still exist today. You know, the New World Order is inspired by them, so.
Well, that's what I keep saying to people, you know, they talk about the New World Order, and when it comes, I said, you're living it, buddy. Like, you're in the middle of it right now. Don't look for it to come. This is it.
Right.
It isn't going to get any better, unfortunately.
Well, George Bush Sr. made the first, I think, one of the first speeches in back in, it was, I think, another September 11th, I believe, in 90-something, 91 or 89.
Oh, during the invasion of the...
Yeah. He mentioned the New World Order. Right, the New World Order. In 10 years, exactly afterwards, there was 9/11. Sorry, you know. So
well,
it's no coincidence.
Oh, of course not. And
the number 11 is pretty much. I mean, it's used a lot throughout the New World Order agenda. I mean, number 11 is pretty demonic, actually.
Right. And if you understand ceremonial magic, as I do, words have to be uttered at exact timing.
Right.
Manifested. It's like taking that rock and polishing it until it becomes a crystal. And it's taking it to the end of the thought. And the end of the thought was to be able to declare war on this planet by the United States by 9/11 when Bush Jr. came out and said, you know, he basically declared war on the planet, calling it terrorism.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it gave him the permission to walk into any country
willingly.
These people will willingly, as I said, if they took down the CN Tower in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, the bloody Canadians would be on their knees begging Bush, or not Bush now, but Obama, to come in and help us. You know, we got terrorists. Right.
But that's their key. That's the key to their power is the consent of the people. People are ready to consent to give away their rights, their constitutional
people
rights.
Are ready to consent to anything that is put together properly.
In
ceremonial magic again. All we have to do is get the red, white, and blue, fly that flag a few times, play America the Beautiful, and everybody's willing to send their son off to get killed.
Yep. Yeah,
you know, poor working people going over to kill poor working people.
Yeah, much more
or
less today, I think.
For a couple of government people who say, this is what we'll do today. We'll have a war here and we'll have a war here. We'll bring these things together. You know?
Yeah, mainly for oil profiteers and war profiteers.
Right. And then the poor little sucker, 19 years old, is over there, you know, fighting. And who comes around the corner? Another guy who couldn't get a job. And he joined the army because he's a poor working slave. You know, and he was told, here's a gun, go shoot somebody. And, there's those bad guys, you know, the Americans, so we'll shoot them. And, you know, or the American says, oh, there's a bad guy, so we'll shoot them. And just total mind control. I mean, hello. Did you see those posters? Did you see the posters that were sent by the Israelis to the Iranians?
I didn't see those, but I may have heard of them. But,
it was pictures of Iranians, and then they put... We love you, at the bottom, and sent thousands of them over to Iran. Guess what happened? The Iranian people took pictures of the Israelis and put "We love you" and sent them back to them. Everybody loves each other,
of course.
We got a leader over there that says he's going to annihilate, take off the face of the earth, all of Israel, right?
Right.
And Israel's
right.
as bad, saying we're going to get you first. So,
yeah. There's. I mean, when you look at any media event aimed at creating chaos, fear, and fear mongering events, like the black guy in England who supposedly decapitated another person on the street. I mean, the officer, right? An army officer on the street. I mean, it's all rigged. The guy waited there for 25 minutes for the police to come down and get him, and there was there was people walking around. They weren't even panicked. There was no blood, neither on his hands, which was colorized. They were colorized afterwards. I mean, before they broadcast the thing that they said was live, it was cauterized. His hands were cauterized. They were, you know, they were red because they were cauterized. There was no blood on the street by the body who was supposed to be beheaded. It was all bullcrap. I mean, really, it's a total bullcrap, and people are ready to believe anything they show on TV. I mean, I have so many gullible people that tell me every day, but it's on TV. It must be real. I'm like, what TV?
Mark, they do it constantly to us. they got us programmed into stuff. You know, when I was a kid, you know, in the 60s, and I look back, if I saw something happen, man, I got the hell away from it. I didn't want nothing to do with it. Well, today, you're a damn hero, and you get money. It's called, what do they call it? John, help me with that. Where are you?
Snitching.
Eh?
Snitching?
It's snitching, all right.
Yeah.
You're being a rat.
Yeah, a rat.
You know? And now they call it, what do they call it? Isn't that awful? I lost my train of thought. But anyway, you can get paid for ratting on people.
Oh yeah. Of course, it's going back to World War II in Europe, in France, when you were turning in people that weren't Nazis or pro Nazis or whatever. It's just it's kind of crazy. Actually, our current Pope did that for the former Nazi Argentinian government. He did that. He turned people in. People tend to forget that, but this poor loving Pope used to be a snitch under the former Argentinian government. So
I know in Canada,
get your history and facts straight. You know,
we got great big billboards that say "turn people in and you get money for it."
Right.
You know, basically that's what it is. You know, you got a toll free number, and we don't monitor it, and we don't know who you are, and but you're going to get a check. You know, in the mail, for turning anybody in that has something to do with, stupid things like, smoking marijuana or something. I don't know. Just, crazy things. Now, if I saw somebody being killed on the street, of course, I'd call the cops, and get some kind of help and, to try to save a life. But, just snitch on somebody for doing something silly like that. It's just ridiculous. And, you're just being a rat. And so no trust, though. Come on. There's no trust left in this planet. You know, they've taken away the rural areas. They're all owned by corporations like Monsanto's. And they've taken away the rural area. They put everybody into the urban area in a nice little box. And they put, they got them so paranoid, they put 7 locks on their door so nobody can steal any of their stuff. They give them an Xbox and a plasma, 60-inch plasma TV, and they say, "You're happy. Now eat your McDonald's, and shut up." And people just go along with it.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, there's one thing remaining, and it's up to us, really. It's our intuition. And depending on how elevated our mind or conscious is, we'll be able to use our discernment. Is that how you say it?
Right.
Discernment, or discernment is the key to free ourselves. I mean, in today's world of mind control and permanent mind control at all levels, discernment, basically, just be able to shy away or free ourselves away from this pressure from the mind control, media and blackmail that we're getting.
And that is so hard to do, Mark. So hard to do, because we got to pay our rent at the end of the month.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Blackmail. That's part of the blackmail that we're under pressure.
It's part of the slavery.
Yeah, it's part of the slavery. We're totally, totally harmless to the elites as long as we're not billionaires or millionaires like them.
Well, I know.
But it only takes 1% of the population to actually change the rest of the world. Basically,
1% of the population's got the balls to do it. That's the thing.
Yeah. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe. we just have to do it on purpose.
Too, we are part of that energy. There is a singularity within the multiverse, and anyway, Mark, we got to go. It's coming to the end of the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me. I found that word. Crime Stoppers is the name of it.
Oh, Crime Stoppers. Right.
Yeah, there's great big billboards. Crime Stoppers, and you can turn somebody in and get paid for it. Anyway, well, it's been an honor and a pleasure, Mark, having you here at Project Freedom Radio Network, and we got to do it again real soon, bud.
Yeah, definitely. It was a great pleasure for me, too, and catch up with some of your listeners that I know and yourself. That was great. That was a great moment.
And we certainly will take into consideration, I'm talking to everybody out there, take into consideration in your neighborhood, mm-hmm. your area, to have yourself a UFO dinner.
Yes, yes, yeah. Absolutely. We're going to be translating the new site into English, so you'll be able to check out what's going on in France and in actually Argentina and other countries. But it would be a great venture if you could branch out, you know, in your neck of the woods. It would be awesome.
Well, make sure
I'd be ready to help you out. Okay. out if you need any information.
Let me know when that site is up in English, so that I can post it and we can maybe do something about it. Maybe I'll do one in Toronto or something here.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great. I'll be glad to come if I can afford it.
Maybe we'll be able to whip up some money so you can afford it. Right. Anyway, great to have you again, Mark, and we'll talk to you real soon. And
okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care.
Good night, Mark.
Good night.